Around the NFL Podcast. Love the hell out of Rhode Island.
Welcome to another edition of the Around the NFL Podcast. My name is Dan Hanses, and I am joined in a room filled with some heroes. Chris Wessling to my left, Greg Rosenthal to my right. What is up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
Aren't you forgetting someone?
No. I mean, when you are a special guest of the pod, you get the separation introduction. And the embryonic stages of this very podcast, it began.
Oh, I thought you were going to introduce the six-time champion. I don't know. All right, I guess. It's cool to have six.
Yes, you know the voice. It's unmistakable. That's Dave Damashek of the Dave Damashek Football Program. He is sitting in the Sessler chair this week. Or on Monday, Sessler is away with the family. Dave, thanks for rejoining us on the show.
Hanses, the boss, Wes, what a pleasure to see you. Rick behind the glass, happy belated birthday.
Thank you.
Are you okay with Rick?
I mean,
Ricky Hollywood.
Yeah,
a little butch,
that better.
But
a little bit.
Rick Hollywood, who celebrated her 20-somethingth birthday.
27, baby.
Okay, I don't know when it becomes a thing where you gotta
be
careful.
I'm still young.
27's fine. You were aware of the 27.
It's fine. It's teetering on the edge of over the hill, but it's
the reason
fine.
She corrected me is she's like, I don't want people to think I'm 29. Is that
Yeah, you're like 20-something, and I'm like, no, just newly 27.
27's very good.
In her mid or her late 20s? That's the real question.
I think we know the answer.
Now it's late.
27 has proven to be the prime year for sports careers. That is the prime.
I have to say, in my personal experience in life, I only started to figure out how to like have some fun in my 20s when I got around 27. When I was less of a wreck. It was a bit of a mess from like 20 to 26. 27, I started figuring out a little bit. I think, but you seem to have already figured things out.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I know how to.
You have like four different nicknames, so it's like.
Yeah. But also, this is like really morbid, but if I don't die this year and I'm not in the 27
club,
then that means I'm just like a loser.
Well, so either way, you win.
You win by staying alive.
True. But I guess you guys are all here, right?
Can you name
anyone? That's the game. Stay alive.
Can you name anyone in the 27 club?
Amy Winehouse, Kurt Cobain, Jim Morrison.
Nice. Janis Joplin.
And there's
Marilyn
a third
Monroe.
One. And there's a third one from that era.
Hendrix.
Jimi Hendrix, also 27 years of age. Right.
Yep.
But think of it this way. As one of my pals always points out, you have 6 years until you're Jesus's age. After that, it starts to get embarrassing. Look at all that Jesus did at 33 before he went out. Like, now I'm so far past that, my life has been an embarrassment.
You never had a fishes and loaves moment?
No, I didn't.
Not yet. And Ricky had a big party on Friday in West Hollywood. For me, and I know you didn't take offense to it, never was on my radar. Once the weekend hits in February after the Super Bowl, I'm locked into dad mode.
Yeah.
But apparently Wes, who doesn't have kids yet, I've already laid out your schedule for your life, which I've been on track with your marriage, your engagement, your marriage, and you're going to have a kid by next May as well.
Whoa.
So you need to knock all this stuff out. So you were in West Hollywood, maybe the oldest man in the bar, let's be honest.
There's no doubt. Like, one woman claimed to be the oldest person at the party, and she was at least a dozen years younger.
She was 33.
She was at that Jesus age, and I'm turning 45 in a week.
Yeah, that was – I texted just that. I'm too old for this. You don't want
Greg me texted me and said,
the party.
I called the bar, and they said I was too old to get in. And I said, that's weird because it's my friend's house. And then he was like, oh.
I was like, that's even worse.
I've never noticed about Wes, but with the white beard now in, and it is just about fully white, plus you have the bald head, you are in a nice spot, which is that you're sort of like Sparky Anderson or Jim Leland or what's her name, Angela Lansbury, who at a certain age, it just leveled and they stayed that age for the next 40 years.
You know what I call that? The Steve Martin All-Stars.
The Steve what?
Steve Martin.
Oh, the Steve Martin All-Stars.
Yeah,
right, exactly, right.
There's no – yeah, I'm totally with you. Look at Wes.
Well, my fiance informed me as I was going through chemo that I might be the only person who got better looking through cancer.
Isn't that sweet? You found
That's
the
great.
One.
Yeah.
You found the one with that one, yeah.
So Sheck's with us, Dave Damashek Football Program. He's also part of the Adam Carolla universe. I lose track of all the projects you have cooking, but you have Good Sports over there.
That's right.
And then you have your show, your buddy Feeney.
Correct.
That is called
Daves of Thunder.
Daves of Thunder.
Good Sports is on Adam Carolla's show daily, and yes, the Dave Dameshek football program.
Before I even met Shook, a couple of my friends from like high school and growing up in the neighborhood.
Shook or
Sheck? I mean, Sheck.
Yeah.
Before I met Sheck, a couple of guys from my neighborhood were huge Daves of Thunder fans, and I had never even heard of Sheck. Mm. So, I mean, that podcast has been a hit for
Feeney
a long time.
Is a great yin to Sheck's yang. I've said that to Sheck. It's great to hear two buddies. And Feeney kind of keeps Sheck in order a little bit, which I've tried to do. It's impossible. Nobody can keep Sheck in order. Feeney seems to keep you a little bit reined in. Like
what
no
the
one
boss
else.
Does to Jezelnik. Same dynamic on his show, right?
So you respect him. You respect Feeney, but you don't respect us to keep you in line?
I don't even know what that's.
That's a Greg. Right. That's Greg. Right? That's everything.
Yeah, my
know.
Patriots beat the Steelers. You can't talk. I own you.
All right, a lot to get to today. Speaking of those Patriots, those damn Patriots. At some point, the Patriots dynasty will end. And if it does, I'm not saying when. If it does, who would be most likely in the NFL to be the next dynasty? Because we go through the years, Sheck, and you know this well. You had the Packers. You had your Steelers, you had the Cowboys, you had the Niners, you had the Cowboys again. Are we going to give them the second dynasty?
Definitely.
In the 90s?
Oh, certainly. Okay. I mean, as a matter of fact, had Jimmy and Jerry not had their falling out, I think we would regard that as the greatest dynasty of the Super Bowl era. With the Patriots now notwithstanding, but up until that, by the 20th century, yeah, I think that would definitely is a little bit underrated as we look back on how dominant that early 90s Cowboys team was.
That's true. And, of course, now the Pats in the 21st century. Who will be next? There will be someone, maybe someone other than the Patriots. We'll talk about which teams that could be. And also, on the other side of it, some teams that have been competitive. A lot of this I brought up just to talk about the Steelers. Teams that have been competitive for many years that maybe now are in danger of falling off the cliff, taking a relevance dirt nap. I'll put it that way. What are some teams out there?
And you think the Steelers might be one of those teams.
They came to mind, and I figured, Sheck's here. Maybe if we talk about that, we'll see where Sheck falls on that.
I'm in.
Nothing personal. But before that.
So we are going to talk about them as being. Okay.
Before we do that, though, let's catch up on the news.
We're here tonight with music's most valuable players to present a very super award. Best pop duo or group performance?
You see, Greg, they get Julian Edelman there and they put it in the prompter. Most valuable musicians, super. There you go. Super Bowl MVP.
I mean, it's one of the great exciting part of winning the Super Bowl is you get to go present on the Grammys 5 days later.
You know that
it does seem to happen. I think that's like the second time Edelman's been there.
And
right.
And you get to, you know, I DVR'd Julian.
They're like, who else is hot we can pair him with? Okay, McCourty. We'll do that.
That was a little weird. But you know, I DVR'd.
Why is that weird? He's had a better career than Edelman.
It's fine. Julian Edelman on Ellen. I got that on the DVR, and I put one of those save until delete status because when they shave that beard, that's great.
What
fun that was. You weren't tracking Julian Edelman?
I'm just surprised you put – I didn't know he was on Ellen, but I am surprised that you put save until I delete on that show.
I just loved it so much. Can't get enough of it.
I mean, I did receive those T-shirts finally today from the Edelman, so I like that.
That was nice.
That's very nice of them.
It's great. Sorry, you didn't feel the same way.
I didn't. I threw it in the trash and then poured Diet Coke all over it. But, that, you know, I'm just done with the Patriots.
Is that honestly. Right? You really spoiled him.
I did.
So that he couldn't go.
Oh, not his.
Dumpster diving.
Not mine. own. But, yeah, he did it and then put it. But it wasn't just like a personal satisfaction. He wanted to let the world know. So he sent it out on his
Instagram. Some people just like to watch the world burn. That's where I'm at emotionally. All right. Let's start with the Cleveland Browns. Always in the news, it seems now, and a big, big signing on Monday. Kareem Hunt is going to get a second chance at his NFL career with the Browns, who announced Monday they're signing the free agent running back. Hunt, the 2017 rushing leader, was cut abruptly in late November after a video surfaced of the running back shoving and kicking a woman during a February 2018 incident at a Cleveland hotel. Should be added here. The league has yet to finish the investigation into Hunt's investigation. Rap Sheet reported Hunt is facing a baseline six-game suspension So you knew he was going to probably land somewhere just because he's too good and he's too young, and that's just the way this business works. And all businesses, really, by the way. I don't think, you know, if you're really good at what you do, you tend to get second chances, even if maybe you don't deserve one. But, Sheck, the Browns are the team that decide to go all in. Your initial thoughts on the signing?
It's, as we were talking just before we got going here, the NFL, as you say, all businesses, it is representative and a reflection of any other industry. And Dorsey has an existing relationship with Kareem Hunt. I think that's the key detail there for him to be able to say, I believe in this guy because I have known him for a number of years. It's self-validating as much as it is a fitting a personnel need that I don't even think that the Browns needed to have. Overarching, the initial feedback is not necessarily great, but my main reaction from a football standpoint is this something you had to do? If you didn't know the kid, you probably wouldn't have done it, Dorsey.
I mean, they didn't have to roster wise.
That's what I'm saying. Right.
They have Nick Chubb, who PFF had him as one of the top four or five just pure runners in the NFL last year, and at the very least, he looks like a really good starting running back. Duke Johnson's on the roster, but you're right that they know Hunt. And, like, it's a cold-blooded business that he was going to be back in the league, whether you like it or not, because of where he was in his career, and partly because of the reputation that he had in Kansas City with the people that he worked with, that they experienced Kareem Hunt as a guy that they saw as a core player that they were going to build around, that was like a leader for their team. And so I think the way football people like Dorsey think is, he made this mistake. He's made all the steps since then as good as possible, and I know him. I'm going to give him a job.
Well, I think most of us agree that people should get second chances, and I think that we gain understanding of ourselves and others through mistakes and setbacks and difficulties and looking in the mirror and showing remorse. And I don't know. He's being investigated for three different things by the NFL, so this doesn't seem like a one-time thing to
right.
me. On the other hand, John Dorsey's statement said, we've done our due diligence. This is a man who's shown remorse. He's gone to programs to help him with his anger management. He has done the work. I guess I have to take John Dorsey at his word that this guy's worth a second chance. He knows Kareem Hunt a lot more than I do, but that the fact that they're investigating three different scenarios with him does not leave a good taste.
It's a more talented roster on Monday afternoon than it was Monday morning. So from that standpoint, I get it. The Chubb thing is interesting because if you had a glaring hole at running back, that would make me think, all right, I'm going to roll the dice here and hopefully this doesn't blow up my face. With the Browns, though, they seem pretty well set up at the position. I don't quite get the risk, but he is a stud player.
I think in their mind, there is almost no risk because they're willing to live. Like, obviously, they don't want anything to happen off the field again. But I think in their cold-blooded calculation, they think we're barely investing in this guy, you know, money.
And what is it, $1 million, I think?
Yeah, he's on a rookie contract. Yeah. I mean, they don't have to pay him almost anything, and he's awesome. I mean, he's awesome at playing NFL football. So there's almost no risk when it comes to that, and then they accept whatever risk it is that he might get them in trouble.
You know what? I hate to get up on Mount Pius, and I hate to damn with faint praise, but it is worth taking a second that in the middle of the hottest team in the AFC, the Kansas City Chiefs, right in the middle of what looked like a championship run for them this past season, that they said they made the very hard decision to just say, yep, goodbye. We're not going to have that in our organization. I think they're to be hailed. While everybody today is busy saying, tisk, tisk, Browns, not enough praise for the Chiefs in that moment making a big move like that.
Well, Sheck, the last time you were on this show, we talked about Antonio Brown and the fact that there are teams in the NFL who would not want him on their roster, period. But John Dorsey's sort of the flip side of that. This is a guy who drafted Tyreek Hill, Demetrius Harris in Kansas City. He drafted Caleb Brantley and Antonio Callaway last year with the Browns. He's going to take chances on guys who have bad reputation.
And I think the Chiefs, to their credit, also were thinking, we're in the middle of a chance to win a Super Bowl here, and they didn't want it being part of the whole story that they had to deal with.
Yeah.
I mean, it kind of saved them the trouble of having to deal with all of that.
Let's move on. Kyler Murray, quarterback, drafted 9th overall by the Oakland A's in the MLB draft last year, played his senior year, He was a quarterback at Oklahoma, wins the Heisman, and all of a sudden he has a decision to make, and he has now decided officially that he's all about football. On his social media on Monday, he announced that, quote, moving forward, I am firmly and fully committing my life and time to becoming an NFL quarterback. So he's working out with trainers, getting that football body going for the combine. So add another big name, Sheck, to the quarterback ranks. I'm already seeing a report out there that the Giants think his hands are too small. It is that time of year. But enter Kyler Murray into the mix, Heisman Trophy winner.
I think that, listen, he's very small. I know that we got over, I think, as a society now, we've gotten over that you can be 6 feet and still be a capable NFL quarterback.
What's he at?
5'9"-ish or Whoa. Close to 5'10". People say he levels right at 5'10".
But it's the weight that's – he's 180 pounds compared to, like, Baker Mayfield and Russell Wilson being in the 215 to 220 range.
I still don't even buy Mike Vick as a six-footer. I've stood next to the guy. But, I mean, the you know, the arm
– It's recorded on my Instagram forever.
The wheels. I like him as a fit for a team that has a crummy offensive line, in the short term at least. You drop him behind there, that can negate. Those guys who can run away from pressure for the first couple few years of their career, I think he's fine as an NFL guy. And I talk about this time of the year, Hanzus. This is the time of the year where we have to indulge this. I don't know if Kyler Murray, if he's a first-round draft pick. He's going to be a first-round draft pick. Let's stop the nonsense. Of course he's going to be a first-round pick.
He would be the first guy ever.
Denver would be a great spot for that guy with that defense.
Mm. He's the first, if it happens, he'd be the first ever drafted in the first round of MLB and NFL in the same year, which is pretty amazing. Hmm. Speaks to his athleticism. And as a Jets fan, Jets picking third, I want as many quarterbacks in this mix because for the first time in forever, we're not looking for a quarterback. So if anybody wants to trade up as a team that has a lot of roster deficiency, come on up to the third pick. Go get Kyler Murray if you want.
Well, Rap Sheet said when he talked to people in early December, they were saying second or third round. When he talked to them, you know, a day or two ago, now they're thinking late first round. But like Sheck said,
right,
with quarterbacks, they always fly up the board.
Christian Ponder went in the top 10.
Right. I mean, there were different points early on when, you know, like October, December, where RG3 wasn't necessarily a first round pick, where I'm trying to think of, you know, Carson Wentz, when Jeremiah put him in the top 10 in his first mock draft, people were like, what? And he ends up going number two. So
what were people like?
It always happens. It always happens like
Blake
that.
Blake Bortles.
It is a pretty.
Oh, it turns out Blake was a reach.
It is a pretty big, unique. It is a unique decision, though, to give back $4.5 million, which is what he's doing. He's giving back 1.3, which he already got, and he was about to get another three. So he's making that bet, and history says it's actually, you know, people kind of trying to make the debate like which is better. Well, first of all, you should do whatever you love and do whatever you want to do, but financially, like, being an NFL quarterback is much safer than going into baseball anyways.
Of course, because look at Drew Henson, former Michigan quarterback who split time with Tom Brady and who was, from the time I've been watching sports, the golden boy of college athletes. Like, nobody was a more hyped two sports star than Drew Henson. And made it to the majors for a cup of coffee and barely ever made any money as a Major League Baseball player, even though he was a top 10 prospect for the Yankees.
And this Murray news is going to lead to changes to MLB, and because what happens is the MLB teams don't get a chance to really compete with what the NFL can offer, and it's going to cost the A's a top 10 pick, which is obviously it's not as glowing as it is in the NFL because you get drafted in the NFL and you're in the league and making an impact immediately. Baseball takes a couple of years, but still there's I think a rule change on the table already that would allow MLB teams to hand out actual, like, competitive contracts to these kids that get drafted. It would be the Kyler Murray
glass half full for the Athletics, though. There, it's not like history doesn't have a lot of evidence of guys saying, like, okay, I've mastered this sport. You still have my rights, right? I'll show up at training. I'll see you in 2021.
Or he flames out.
Right.
He says, I'm not good at football.
I mean, there's not that many of these players anyways. I mean, how often does this happen? Jeff Samardzija?
Yep.
I mean, that was like the last one I can think of at this level. What about 10 years ago now?
What about the guy that got lost on the American flag in Cleveland?
Brandon Whedon.
Elway, Chaz Ward,
Brian
Bo,
Jordan.
Yes, of course. He's the one people forget about.
He was good at both.
He was good. That's right. Brian Jordan.
How about Tom Brady, catcher?
Ricky
Montreal,
Williams,
Danny Ainge.
Toronto drafted him.
Danny Ainge played both. Yep.
Yeah, I remember like maybe it was like three or four Super Bowls ago when they were already out of stuff to talk about the Patriots. Like, you know, Tom Brady could have been a baseball player.
I mean,
a 6'4" catcher.
We've covered every possible angle of the Tom Brady Patriots. Everything's been covered.
I'm fine just like not covering them.
Can I say one? Here's a hot take for you if you want me to say one more thing. I feel like the last 3 months, the last 2 months even, have in the ongoing debate that that has raged in society, not like since nature versus nurture, Belichick or Brady, I think it now is fairly clear. It's more Belichick than Brady, right?
Ooh,
it's like,
wow.
You know, it's like 65-35 now.
At all.
I don't think that at all either, but I do agree that it was a great Super Bowl for Belichick. I did think about
it
that.
Great,
that it's like
it great,
Brady's had some and
yeah,
Belichick's
and
had some.
Last year we're having the
right.
exact opposite
exactly,
conversation.
Exactly.
Eric Reed, he's sticking around with the Panthers. He signs a 3-year deal worth $22 million. The safety who was out of football and then signed in September with Carolina. He was connected, of course, with Colin Kaepernick, kneeling for the national anthem to protest police brutality and racial injustice. He gets a job with the Panthers, and the Panthers keep him around because as soon as he stepped in the lineup, Greg, he was every down guy for them.
Yeah, he was rock solid. It shows that, like, a lot of people gave David Tepper, the owner, who seemed to push this through, a lot of credit for, you know, standing up and signing him and doing kind of the right thing, which it was. But it was just a smart business move. Now they got him locked in. He helped out for very little money, and it worked out for both sides that now he's going to be their safety for a long time. He's an NFL starter.
Let's talk about the AAF, guys. Opening weekend, it's the American Alliance of Football. I believe that's what it stands for.
Worst thing about it so far, right? It's
right.
the name of the.
Well, a lot of people are just calling
league.
It the Alliance.
AAF.
I think it's just now
I like the
Alliance.
A little
people
bit.
Are into that. Yeah.
My Twitter mentions were kind of inundated with people asking my takes on various players and teams, and I have to say, I host an NFL podcast. So I'm not going to say I'm burnt down on football, but I don't need to invest myself in a second league a week after the Super Bowl, so I stayed away. But there were some big headlines that came out of it, and already the league does feel, Wes, that just from somebody that's from an outsider that's not digging in, but it already seems to have more positive buzz than, say, the XFL ever did. I can't go as far back to the old, what was the Trump League?
USFL?
I can't go that far back, but judging off XFL, I feel like the Alliance is already in better shape after 1 week.
Well, it does seem like people are more positive about it. What I think history tells us about all these leagues is the things to pay attention to are potential rule changes, not really the players. Like, where did the two-point conversion come from? The WFL, they had an action point. Sheck might be old enough to remember the Dicker Rod, which was a first down change. It was named after a guy named George Dicker. He came up with a chain that was about 2.5 yards long, but the way it worked, it was just as accurate.
It's called a Dicker Rod?
It was called a Dicker Rod.
Okay.
I remember the fumble Ruski, but not a Dicker Rod.
Did they have to bleep that out when it was on the telecast?
No, they showed it. So the Dicker
like
Rod
pixelated
never
Dicker
really
Rod.
Caught on. You know, replay review came from the USFL. Like, these are the things. And even coaches, you'll see more coaches cross boundaries over to the NFL, but you won't see I don't think you'll see as many players who are going to make an impact in the NFL.
Christian Hackenberg was a total nightmare in his debut. So, again, doesn't look like it was the right move by Mike Maccagnan to draft him in the second round. Trent Richardson had 2 touchdowns, but averaged about 1.5 to 2 yards a carry in a win for his team. Anything else, Greg?
I mean,
you were a little plugged in.
Not too plugged in terms of watching, but even Super Bowl week, I had come to the same conclusion that you just said, that this is more of a thing. The Alliance is more of a thing. It's more respected. It's catching on more, and it just seems better run with everything behind the scenes and hiring and everything. Than, for instance, the UFL. I don't know if you guys remember that.
Oh, yes.
We cover the crap out of that at Pro Football Talk. Like, we thought that was going to be a thing. Or the XFL.
It was also on NBC, right? Wasn't NBC, didn't it own PFT?
Yeah, but I didn't know in the UFL. Yeah, the UFL, not the XFL, the United Football League, which did not last long, which I feel like Mike.
Is that the Jaws League? Jaws was an owner with Bon Jovi.
That's the Arena League. He's
okay.
Still in the mix.
All right,
there.
I'm in the weeds a little
this
bit.
Was like
this
2000,
was the one that Josh McCown played.
Right, this was like 2009.
Okay.
But similar that the NFL was looking at it as a possible developmental league, and you mentioned, you know, Dan, how they're showing it on NFL Network. That's a big deal. I think people want a developmental league, and the appetite from fans being so into it is telling. 5 days after the season that they're already kind of getting into this goofy new league where Steve Spurrier – who doesn't like seeing Steve Spurrier go up and down the field on Mike Martz?
That's right. The XFL was all about novelty. Sure. People rejoiced.
40-6,
how zany
it,
the chase to the center of the field to see who got the ball first in the XFL. But that's all hokum that wears off quickly. The brilliant move, the first brilliant move they made, was starting it the week immediately after football. While it's still at the tip of your brain, I get the Hanzus effect of I just ate. This is a good time to go to the grocery store so I don't buy junk. But this is football, and that is an essential food stuff that is a part of all our diets. One. Two, the CFL missed its chance. I said for years, they need to go with the NFL rules. I don't care what your rules are.
Right.
What you want is to become the feeder to the NFL. Too bad, CFL. Now it belongs to the Alliance. The uniforms look good.
Well, they're
the
doing
USFL,
great. The CFL does great, relatively. Yeah, in Canada.
Could be even bigger.
Canada.
Could be even more relevant if they listened to Damashek. Two, the USFL was a great league. Don't lump it in with dumb XFL or WFL or UFL. That was a legit league. And I do think, Wes, that you're absolutely right to be cynical about what we saw in terms of talent now. But if they can just take it nice and steady, by year two, there will be more talent in there. I think the tough thing that Trump wanted to do that ultimately scuttled the USFL was to put it up against
the
NFL.
Yeah.
It's a little too soon, but what you want it to be is a feeder league. So therefore, you need it to start, let's say, 6 to 8 weeks before the NFL season kicks off. Ultimately, but
the NFL's for it, and I think a lot of people in the NFL also see it like, well, there's more jobs. I mean, there's more personnel jobs, there's more coaching jobs, and I think there's so many people in the NFL that want a developmental league kind of badly.
And they don't need to even – it's their own developmental league, essentially, and they don't have to pay a dime. And they show no fear in it. We'll put it on our own network. We'll promote it. We want it to be successful because we know it's not a real threat. It's perfect.
Real quick, the two rules that I think you should keep an eye on. The viewers can hear the conversation between the official and the people in the league office during a replay review.
Ooh.
That's pretty cool. And secondly, there are no onside kicks, but after you score, you can choose to take the ball at your own 28-yard line, and you must get a 12-yard gain.
There's a lot going on. You kind of can't blitz, which I need to dig in more, but they have a lot of defensive rules where it's
there's a maximum. You can't have more than 5 rushers, I think.
Right, So it's like, I don't know. I think it could be fun. And it rated, for what it's worth, higher than the NBA.
Let's watch the next 2 weeks and see where those ratings are. But, yeah, no, I think that's a fair point. One other thing very quickly is over the last few months I've come to realize that, as I used to always say, that in a world of 7 billion people, how can't we find 32 people to play quarterback effectively in the NFL? I think we now are just about saturated with starters in the NFL. I mean, I mean that in a good way. There are only like 5 teams that you rightly can point at and say, boy, they better fix that QB thing. And I think we're about to have an overflow with the college kids coming in. This will be a good place to send them.
I mean,
go get your reps,
kid. They're starting Hackenberg and Berkovici
just telling
this weekend.
You.
But you know,
that was Wes's old guy, Berkovici.
I like Berkovici.
He took a tough blindside hit. Martz really needs
By the way, Hackenberg beat out Mettenberger in camp. It looks like Mettenberger is probably going to get a week 2 start. I am not joking when I say that. All right, let's move on to Headlock Watch.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Oh, my New York Jets. They are going all in on what I call the George Costanza opposite theory. Do everything the opposite of what they think they should do, which is building a staff of people who hate each other and seeing what happens. So, yes, Wes, you called it Headlock Watch last week, and here we are, the Jets now. In addition to hiring Greg Williams and teaming him with Adam Gase, which is volcanic.
That's a good way to put it.
They also hire Greg Williams' son, Blake,
right,
who rubs some people the wrong way and has never had a coaching job at this level when his dad wasn't involved. They had now added to the staff Joe Vitt. Who's Joe Vitt? You remember Joe Vitt. Joe Vitt was a football lifer. He was on that Saints team that was implicated in the 2012 Bountygate scandal. And in the ensuing hearings conducted by Tags, Paulie Tags, you remember that? They had Paulie Tags running the hearings. What a time that was. Vitt accused Greg Williams of lying in his testimony. Vitt also said players didn't take Williams, who is now the defensive coordinator of the Jets, and his colleague, players didn't take him seriously because of his, quote, false bravado and, quote, shtick. Williams was then, as I assume part of its testimony implicating Williams led to him being suspended indefinitely, which ended up being an 11-month ban. And Vitt, who was suspended six games after bounty gate. Anyway, they're all together now in the same Florham Park facility. Wes, let's get ready to rumble!
For the first time since I've known you, for the first time in this podcast, like, I care about the Jets. Like, I want more Jets news, not less Jets news.
You're going to get it.
Enjoy Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell. They're really going to complete this delicious Sunday you're building.
By the way, I don't buy into
that. Wait, did you even mention my favorite twist of all of this?
Yes.
Which is Joe Vitt is Adam Gase's father-in-law.
Why not?
Like, I don't know what that really means for everything, but it's just it makes for like another fun episode in this drama when, like, you know, the daughter comes home, she's not he's not happy with the dad. It's like, can I fire her dad? It's all
thing.
Oh,
it's a delicious.
Are they now the number one choice for Hard Knocks amongst this room?
I would love to see him on again.
No, I can't have Greg Williams on again.
No.
He has to be.
I've had it. No.
It's a rule.
He says bad words. It's so hilarious.
Joe Vitt's awesome, though. You mentioned how he came back. He was suspended six games. That reminded me. Do you remember he was the co-coach that year with Aaron Cromer? That they had.
Oh, yeah.
They didn't have a head coach. They had two head coaches.
Was that with the do your job sign in the facility with the Sean Page giant face?
It was like
on the practice
Sean was
wall?
Like, Joe, put my poster as large as you can, watching over. I said, at least the Jets can look at it this way. I used to have a theory: Joe Vitt should be the permanent interim head coach because he did a very entertaining job with the Rams in the mid-2000s, and then he did a credible, fun press conferences job with the Saints, and he should just be like an interim coach for hire. So if Adam Gase does happen to lose his job early along the way, at least you got him in place.
You're halfway right. What you're missing is what's making these Jets hires so brilliant is that no team has better interim coaches ready to replace Adam Gase, because Greg Williams took the frickin' Browns and made them on pace to be a 10-win team in the second half of last year. They're set up.
And who else do we add to the mix?
We got Jim Bob Cooter.
We got a Cooter in the mix.
Cooter's back in the house. Love that Cooter.
Mazel tov.
Look out,
Patriots. Your reign is over.
Remember when he was going to be a head coach, and now he's the Jets running backs coach?
I wonder if that's a fall.
That happens a lot in the NFL.
You got to build yourself back up. Look at your boy Doug Marrone.
Yeah,
he was coaching up offensive linemen.
Look at Howie Roseman.
I mean, Cooter's come
back from the Poconos.
Cooter's come back before from some setbacks.
Can't rule out Cooter.
Just rounding out some coaching news: Jim Caldwell, he lands with the Dolphins, coaching quarterbacks, and Bob Sutton joins the Atlanta Falcons staff. Of course. Most recently was the DC of the Chiefs. So he didn't make it there, but he gets a chance with Atlanta.
Did a great job in the second half there against Tom Brady.
Brian Flores, Caldwell is one of the few non-expatriates. He really was successful in taking a lot of the assistants, and another one or two left. They are going to have a pretty brand new coaching staff.
Who is number one, like the Belichick coaching tree?
Bill O'Brien.
Is Bill O'Brien the only guy that's found
any success?
Any success,
yeah.
From the coach, Saban, you know. The
I don't count Nick Saban
as
coming
NFL.
From the Belichick coaching tree.
Come on, Greg.
I mean,
you could take this L.
I would say Saban would say no coach influenced him more, certainly. NFL coach.
You could have Nick Saban. There you go. You win
that
too.
College football podcast.
He's had an amazing coaching tree, Greg.
No, he has a terrible one. But you said it was his coaching tree. I would consider that.
I guess I'm
not many. Yeah, not many.
Zero. In fact, I would. I'd go so far as to say
Dimitrov.
I mean, how excited can you be if you're a Dolphins guy right now? What evidence is there is that? Oh well, he learned at the knee of Belichick. We're good. I mean, there's no evidence that that's going to be true.
He seems like a unique
he does.
Guy, though.
Oh, well, Matt Patricia didn't seem unique.
I also think
every man is on his own. You never know. I'm just saying Flores is impressive.
I agree.
I also think if you want to bring in college, Nick Saban, Charlie Weiss at Notre Dame, it kind of just balances it out.
Oh, yeah. There's been a lot of, he's got Kirk Ferentz at Iowa, Pat Hill, Fresno State.
Just making up names, though.
Be still my heart. Pat Hill.
That's what's happening in the news. All right. Let's assume the Patriots die. It's over. Tom Brady played not a very good game, let's face it, a nice drive there in the fourth quarter, but showed his age at times last season.
Oh, Wes and I had it out a little bit on Twitter, a little bit when I said that was a crummy Brady game that they survived. He was nails in overtime in Arrowhead, but he was not good over the course of regulation time. The story would have been if D. Ford doesn't put his hand off sides.
Yes, please.
The story is one touchdown, three picks. Father Time remains undefeated. That would have been the story, whether you like it or not. That's what it would have been.
No, it wouldn't have been exactly, because everyone would remember, A, the last pick came off a drop, and B, he did a lot of good things in that game. But to your point, when I went back and rewatched it, you're right. The first three quarters were up and down, but he made a lot of plays early in the game. And you can't just say, well, if it wasn't for the fourth quarter. Well, if it wasn't for the four straight touchdown drives that he drove when he needed it.
It was a perfect end to the Patriots era if it would have been a drop by Gronk into an interception. It was like, well, that's the end. And
well,
it was great.
Doesn't matter. But this is the first segment I can like reveal my new thing, which is I don't even want them to win next year. That's enough.
You've been saying this since this podcast started.
Now it's really true.
What I've told you before, I'm going to tell it to you again. If you're a Tom Brady guy, what you want is after he retires, you want him to go 6-10. Because if not, then that really knocks the luster off of
what?
I wanted him to retire now. Time.
Wes and Rosenthal.
Was better.
You two. How dare you? But by the way, you know, you do need to go back. You've never watched a game with Bradshaw. You can't rightly debate me on how good he was. But anyway.
Can you get Feeney on the phone? I need some help.
Exactly.
No Bradshaw talk today.
I don't want the Bradshaw
talk. There is
talk.
No right. worry about
Sorry.
A Tom Brady
I am,
narrative.
I'm the one
he's
who
already
really
established.
Let us down this
he's
you two science-based guys, though, don't believe in QB wins. But why is Brady the greatest of all time, if not for the big-time wins?
Hey, those guys can go take a hike. The quarterback's job is to win.
Oh, so you are.
I'm on your side on this.
Oh, I didn't know
that. The quarterback's job is to win, and Brady will say the same damn thing.
I'm with you 100% on that.
Who is the NFL's next dynasty? Okay, we'll start here. We're also going to get into some teams that are going in the opposite direction, not heading toward any dynasty at all. But, Dave, why don't you get us going? Why don't you throw out a team that could – replace the Patriots or succeed them.
Drew Lock's Patriots. Once Brady hangs them up with Bell. No, I will go with here. Let me just explain this in 11 seconds. I believe that the teams that have the QB, a good QB on his rookie deal, are playing with house money. They can spend on luxury items, much like the 2018 Los Angeles Rams have done, what the Chiefs are in a position to do around Mahomes now. But that isn't an enduring operation. You can't do that. Your QB must be so good that once he's making $30 million, you can still have a good roster from top to bottom. Ergo, that describes the Indianapolis Colts. They have their franchise QB locked into a big dollar figure, and yet you see them only rising up. So that will be my first team to throw out there.
That was number one on my list. I'm sure you guys are not surprised. But I sort of had a checklist: ownership, team building, coaching staff, quarterback, young talent, cap space, draft picks, culture, veteran leadership.
Wow.
Recruiting ability.
He did his homework.
He put in the work.
From most important to least important.
Guilty.
Ownership is always the most important. And I know you guys don't like Jim Irsay, but they've had a lot of success.
I love Jim Irsay and all owners.
Yeah, he's had a lot of success. And I think they have every ingredient on that list. Including a impressive 2018 draft class to build around. They've got the most cap space of anybody. They can go out and get people. They don't really have any weaknesses. They've got an impressive coaching staff.
So now these are two different conversations, though. What is a team that's well positioned to knock off the Patriots next year? And what's a team positioned to build a dynasty? There's only been five or six of these teams ever.
Right. So this is a true dynasty. You're not counting like the Seahawks.
I think you got
three titles in the next decade. Let's say that would
3-10. I was going to say 3-5.
To me, the answer is like none. That history would tell us that it's not going to happen, and that what you can hope for is to be like a Seahawks type of team or a Broncos type of team, or even the Colts with Peyton Manning, where you have a long stretch of success. But my answer would be none if that was an option. Is that an option?
All right. Well, that's it.
But
for
I like
show.
Today's show.
No, I mean for a dynasty. If I had to choose, what I have one.
I think
on my list.
And Sheck, you're great with the history of the league. I would say a dynasty is three titles in 5 years. The Steelers accomplished that.
Yeah, they did four.
Four
and
six.
The Cowboys did it. The Patriots did it twice.
They've downed at it twice, yes. They did 3-4 and 3-5.
People put way too much emphasis on winning a Super Bowl and not enough on getting to a Super Bowl.
Right.
Well, see, you could look at that two ways.
Because to me, the
Patriots, win the game.
The Patriots has been throughout the whole time, and especially the aughts to me is a dynasty by the Patriots because they've been in the championship game 8 straight times. To me, it starts in like 10 or 11 when they draft Gronk, even though they didn't win a Super Bowl for a while.
So do we think with because Luck makes a ton of money, do you think they're able to build a roster that could put together 5, 6, 7, 8 years with Luck at the helm?
Yes, I do. And I think it starts with their GM, who's shown to be a very good GM, yes, in his 2 years on the job. They've got still have another extra draft pick from the
right.
Jets trade. They've got more cap space than anyone. They've got a guy who was an offensive rookie of the year candidate, a guy who was the defensive rookie of the year. And I think, you know, the coaching staff, I think the Colts have just about everything.
And I can't argue.
They need to add talent, but they have the avenues to do it easily.
I'm glad you brought up this quarterback thing. I think this has been said so much that now it's overrated, this whole point of, like, it's the most valuable thing to have a rookie guy on a rookie contract. The salary cap went up another $14 million this year. It's up to $191 million.
That's absolutely right.
Your quarterbacks don't take that big of a percentage. And, by the way, if salary cap was so hard and so valuable, how come half the league didn't even spend close to the salary cap last year? These quarterbacks – they don't hurt you that bad. If you can't figure out how to build a team around your $30 million quarterback with another $160 million, it's like that's on you. Free agency now, you're finding a hard time finding good enough players to spend all the money on.
Throw another team out there, Greg.
I mean, the Chiefs, to me, are the obvious and the right answer, not just because Mahomes is on his rookie contract, but because he's Patrick freaking Mahomes. And he's got some great people around him right now, and you got a great coach, I believe a great coach in Andy Reid, and a stable organization and ownership. But I almost don't need all the rest. I just need Mahomes and a coach. That's all I need.
And you know,
well, you need a defense, which is what did you.
Yeah, they haven't had it yet, but they're knocking on the door already.
They have the hardest parts down. They have the coach, and they have the quarterback, and they have ownership, which is steady. Who else is on, what else is on the checklist? Go down the checklist for me again. Let's go with the Chiefs.
I love this.
Okay,
checklist.
Ownership.
Stuff that's good.
Ownership.
Let's give them a plus for sure.
Team building, which you can say GM or whatever.
Yep.
They've done
coaching
a good job.
Staff.
Yep.
Quarterback.
Oh, yeah. Check
young,
plus.
Young talent.
Yep. Got that.
Hill. Kelsey.
Debatable. On one side.
On one side of the ball.
On one side of the ball.
But you also could say they know exactly where they have to put all their efforts into building. It's the defense.
Which is much easier said than done, but
yep.
Sure. Cap space.
Where are they of that?
That's a good question. I think they're – pretty close to the bottom.
Last year they were in trouble with it. Relatively.
All right.
Right now they have $26 million.
Rosie's right that
draft
the cap is going to bump up like another $15 million, so it should throw that off. Two things though. First of all,
wait, are we done with the checklist?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Draft picks would be the last, like, really important one to me.
Wes is correct. By the way, as a side note, John Elway's greatness is not owed to the fact that two rings got tacked onto the back end of his career thanks to Terrell Davis. His true greatness is revealed in getting those three bum Broncos teams to Super Bowls that they had no business. Sammy Winder was the feature back. Vance Johnson was the best wide receiver. John Elway carried those teams.
That's a fair point.
That's his greatness. The team that figured out the cap thing first, though, is with what we have to take advantage of while we have a good QB on his rookie deal, the Seattle Seahawks. And as we expand the definition of dynasty in the 21st century, which Brady and Belichick have to do because they're the only two consistent people along with Bob Kraft in the Patriots dynasty, how about those Seattle Seahawks? They check many of those items that Wes just
come back around.
Yeah. You still have Russell Wilson. You still have Bobby Wags. They have a couple of pieces, just like the New England Patriots. Well, still Pete Carroll, still the QB. By that logic, if they win a Super Bowl, wouldn't we sort of like, they're kind of a dynasty. They won that one. They almost won that second one, and then they won that third. We'd kind of
be. Isn't it such a different team, though? I know there's the guys, that Russell Wilson, and the coach is the same, the GM.
Playoffs every year.
If they went on a run, let's say, next year and won the Super Bowl, would you view that as the same team as the 13?
How's that different than what the Patriots have done?
Well,
that's fair. My biggest question with the Seahawks is starts at the top. They're going to have new ownership. We don't yet know what that's going to be.
True.
And for 3 or 4 years now, we've been hearing that Pete Carroll is just about out the door.
Well, he just re-signed to a new
I believe you were the one telling me last summer that Pete Carroll was out the door.
I know. Well, it didn't happen.
Yeah, I was told 2 years ago this is his last year.
He loved taking his boat from his house to the facility. It's like that was a sign he was no longer serious about football.
Jimmy Graham was flying a plane to the facility.
Exactly. Circling back to the Chiefs real quick, and it didn't happen with the Patriots, but in a lot of different sports.
By the way, they would have won that Super Bowl. They would have beat the Rams. Sorry, Chiefs fans, to even – but I think they know that. If they had won that coin toss and moved down the field on the Patriots defense, we'd be talking about the Super Bowl champion.
But to that point, a lot of teams, we could Jordan's Bulls, but you could like the Yankees dynasty in the 90s. There's usually a heartbreaking, devastating loss when the team is just there. And if something goes their way, they would have won it that year too, but they don't. And that's kind of how I see that Chiefs-Patriots game for this Chiefs team. I would be shocked if they are not a team that is flying next year, and they're my Super Bowl favorite right now.
Let me throw out
I'd agree with
three
that.
Young teams and see which one you guys like best.
I'm going to write one down right here.
Okay. The Chicago Bears meet a lot of the qualifications on the
checklist. I don't love Trubisky, but otherwise
that's
awesome.
I've got like a caveat for each of these teams, and Trubisky is – you have to be a Trubisky believer in order to think it's the Rams or the Bears. How about the Rams?
Right.
No.
Because you don't trust the quarterback?
Because I don't know after a week or plus away from that Super Bowl exactly what went down with Todd Gurley.
Game?
I was but before that, I don't know what was going on
with
McVay and Gurley. I was sure that they were masking, that they were gaming up the injury report and Gurley was hurt. But now the further away I get from it, it seems like there was some issue there. Yeah, we prefer the fat guy who wasn't on a roster 2 weeks ago to the biggest home run hitter in pro football. What? What's going on with Gurley? Plus, they spent on luxury items, like I said, around Jared Goff's rookie deal to get Sue and Tlaib and so on and so forth. They're not going to have that same luxury going
But they
forward.
Do have tons of cap space, and they have as many good players locked in long-term as anyone, which is why I think they're a good choice. The Rams and the Eagles would probably be the next two for me because they're front offices.
Browns is my third one, and my caveat for them is ownership and an untested head coach. But they have just about everything else.
They could have a winning season first, too, before we start talking dynasty.
If we're talking dynasty,
be ahead of the curve here, not wait until everyone else knows it.
With all the teams
There's
we just
of
ran off,
there.
Everybody would have to get none of those teams that we have talked about has even won in the 21st century, has won Super Bowl. Seattle, the exception to that. How about the Philadelphia Eagles?
Yes.
What if Carson Wentz? That is 11 is the most Antonio Brown, Le'Veon Bell, whatever else. The most fascinating offseason storyline is what happens with the frame of mind of number 11 there as Nick Foles moves on and the city says, "But you let our hero go."
Well, I think that's right, because I think if I was making a checklist, the three biggest things are quarterback one, you know, and then maybe two is a front office nimble and flexible enough to adapt to whatever the changes in the league are with salary cap space, with position trends, and then making that work with your coach, which is number three. And I think the Eagles and the Rams are really strong in the front office and in working with their coach and everything, and that's why I think they'll have sustained.
I love the Eagles as a pick. I was going to throw them out there, and Wentz is the reason why for me, because I mean, you could not have more motivation as a quarterback coming off what was really a frustrating lost year and Foles and people doubting you. And remember how good he was before he got hurt. I could see him coming out like a house on fire. And I'm rooting for him because I think it was a really tough situation he's been in since he got hurt. I think that Wentz is a guy to watch as an MVP candidate again next year.
So I guess I'm the only one who had the Eagles as a candidate for the dirt nap section.
Let's transition to that. Go ahead, Wes.
By the way, I like you throwing in Baker because that's the one quarterback I believe in the most. So as a young guy, and so he has a chance.
I guess the only reason I throw it out there is as a fan of a team that is a perennial dirt nap team, like the Browns are, I know everything can change in an instant, but it's going to be really hard for the Browns to take the next step and become a title contender.
2019 champs,
bad
AFC
things,
North. Congrats
bad
in advance.
Happen to the pain rankings teams. And my fear is that the other shoe is going to drop. So the idea of them going to a dynasty level, I'm just going to pump the brakes on everything
now. You're right.
And just see how does Baker Mayfield handle wealth, fame, and success? All in about
well,
the
this
quarterback?
Well, this is an exceptionally high bar. As you said,
do we trust the Haslams?
No.
There's too much to me right now to bring them up in this conversation, as much as it'd be fun if they hit the ground running in 2019.
All right. So you think the Eagles?
No, they weren't my choice, but there are only – I only have three teams that are even candidates for Dirk Knapp. If you say they've been really successful and there's a good chance they will be unsuccessful in 2019, 2020.
Steelers, one of them, right?
Steelers, and yes. Steelers, Patriots, and Eagles were the three I came up with. Mm. But the Eagles – look how many people in that roster are not only over 30, but in their mid-30s or certainly could be towing the cliff. I mean, you're talking about Jason Peters, Darren Sproles, Malcolm Jenkins, Chris Long, Michael Bennett, Travis Kelce, Haloti Ngata, all over 30 years old. I could just see this roster getting old really quickly. And that's not to say they don't have young guys who can come up and take on bigger roles, but I could see like
– and they've got a little more cap issues than almost right. any other team.
And I do, like, they're smart, like you said. They have a very smart leadership. They are well coached. They've got a good franchise quarterback. So they're in great shape, but you could also see them stumbling.
Right. They have Wentz and they have Fletcher Cox. And you're right, the line is a big concern. And they have Lane Johnson. It's like, how many people really stick around for more than five or six years on a team? There's three that I like.
But, you know, I do think that, yes, I think the Jason Peters factor is a massive one, that you can't sleep on that. I don't evaluate offensive linemen, but I've spoken with enough who will convince you he's the best left tackle of the generation. Fletcher Cox is the guy everybody sleeps on. Aaron Donald is the best interior defensive lineman in pro football, but Fletcher Cox is a fairly close 1A to that. I don't see the Eagles. And if I'm looking in the short term, obviously free agency in the draft can change these things. Who's the divisional competition? The Rams? Look out for the Seahawks. Look out for the Niners. I think that they're going to overwhelm the Rams in 2019.
And the 49ers are going to overwhelm the Rams?
Yeah, we're just
I don't mean I mean that they're not going to run. I mean they're not going to run to 13-3 is what I mean. I'm relatively speaking. I don't think they're going to go 7-9 next year. I'm just saying that those teams are going to catch up a little.
By the way, looking at over the cap and their cap space, the Eagles far and away are in the worst cap position right now. According to them, there's $16 million in the red, so they got to do some work just to get under the cap.
Foles is 20 of that for right now.
Well, there you go. That will help obviously a lot. And then the Chiefs, who we brought up earlier, they're kind of right in the middle of the pack, actually, so they're not in too bad shape.
Here's a regression team for you, the Cowboys. If they don't keep Tank Lawrence, who was quietly
in the
top five or six defensive players in the NFL this past season, you don't think he's going anywhere?
No. No team lets a talent like that get away, much less the Cowboys, who always overpay their stars.
Let me ask you this, Shaq. Let's just get to it. We have something here called the P scale. All right. One is your pants, your underpants, where your privates are, completely dry. There's no worry. You're not concerned about anything. Number 10. The pee, it's everywhere. You got to get a diaper on. You got to change your clothes. You put the adult diaper on because you're peeing so much because you're worried. Where are you on the pee scale about the future and present of the Pittsburgh Steelers? 1 to 10.
I can tell you honestly that my only concern.
1 to 10?
19. My pee level scale is about a 4.
Okay.
The only thing I don't love is Mike Tomlin for all the platitudes and you know, it's all based around testosterone. Yes, he owns that defense. That is the thing that I think is underreported nationally and even perhaps on the banks of the Three Rivers. People want to hang it on poor Keith Butler. Oh, his defense, they got to fire that guy. It's Mike Tomlin's defense. Who do you think's calling the show there? That's my concern, although talk about a nice sneaky little hire, Terrell Austin. Talk about a guy who was supposed to be an NFL head coach.
Lower it to two.
2 years ago.
Didn't the Bengals get rid of him in the middle of the season?
I'm just telling you that now they've at least brought someone else in there to help out the defense.
No, brought in Cooter.
No, you're right. He did.
I like the offensive line.
He did a great job taking one of the most consistent defenses in the league and making him the worst.
Oh, stop it. Listen. Let me just say this. The least sexy conversation to have that is a tune out to me and to most football fans is, you know how teams win or go deep in the playoffs year after year? The one consistent factor is dominance on both sides of the line of scrimmage. And the Steelers have that. Even without Mike Munchak, they
that's
have
fair,
a great
don't.
Offensive line. And Cam Hayward, Stephon Tuitt, and Javon Hargrave.
Hargrave
and Tuitt are nice and young, are real nice and young. And Cam Hayward was dominant last year. Listen, I think they're going to win the Super Bowl? No, but I think they're fine.
You know, it'll be a great move.
I think they're certainly competitive with still one of the great quarterbacks of the 21st century, Ben Roethlisberger.
For a little while longer. If you want to go next step and win that trench warfare and up the warfare in your conference, why don't you go poach Dante Scarnecchia up from New England, bring him on as your line coach, and now you're really cooking because that guy's the secret magic sauce.
That's the Patriots way. In fact, you know, the kind of thing that the Patriots do is they take on guys like Antonio Brown. That's the kind of thing that's the thing that people don't talk about with the Patriots, from Josh Gordon to Michael Floyd to so on and so forth.
Randy Moss.
Corey Dillon. They have no problem bringing in guys, and we'll make him all right. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't.
Hey, yeah. You know, stick me with like one of the best receivers of all time who's known for his maniacal work ethic. Bring it on.
Do you have
I'm really not overly concerned. I don't think the Ravens are an 8-8 team.
What about the idea that you – obviously, Roethlisberger is getting older, and now you're going to enter a season without Bell or potentially Antonio Brown.
Extended dirt nap is tough. Are you going – this is a team that never loses –
do you think you're a Super Bowl team without Brown or Bell?
I don't think the Steelers are winning the Super Bowl this year necessarily.
But not ready for a dirt nap either. So
I want to see what Kevin Colbert can pull off in free agency in the draft. Obviously, that's massive.
I mean, to their credit, they have been – even in their down years – they don't stay down for long, and they've been a great organization. They have not been taking any dirt naps for what?
Ben Roethlisberger
30 years
has never had a losing season. He's been in the league for 15 years. How bad are they? Does anybody expect them to turn?
They weren't really outclassed by anyone. Like even in the games they lost,
they beat the Saints.
They blew leads, and their roster is pretty strong even without Antonio Brown.
Cam Jordan that at Super Sunday. I said, I don't want to hear any more crying from Saints people about how you got gypped by the refs. The refs stole a Steelers victory that would have put them into the postseason. Made them the most dangerous team on the AFC.
I agree.
But it happened in week 11, so nobody cares.
Wes, that was week 16.
You by far did the most prep and work ahead of this. You had a whole chart breaking down seven different factors. So I want to give you the last word of one team in either direction that you maybe hasn't come up yet. Take us home, Wes.
Okay.
I feel like we should have a second podcast just going through all the work.
Yeah, I didn't even take any dirt nap. I didn't even choose a dirt nap team. You're lucky, Jaguars.
I think the Saints are an interesting one because what we saw happen throughout the 2018 season was their offense started out gangbusters, to use a Czechism, and then halfway through the season, you started to realize the defense has so much young talent on it, and the defense outplayed the offense, but the offense still has Alvin Kamara and Michael Thomas, two of the best players at the position, still has, even though the offensive line sort of fell off at the end of the year, a pretty solid offensive line. The question is, your quarterback couldn't throw deep for the final month and a half of the season. How do you feel about the Saints as a dynasty with a 40-year-old quarterback?
Turned into an 8.5, didn't nine? Down the stretch there. He did not look
dirt
good.
Nap.
People don't like to say it. Went on the rise in that same division. Why not the Buccaneers? Maybe. So, maybe famous Jameis.
Too early in the offseason for all that.
You don't know what's going to be. You don't know if they're going to go get Levy and
I know. I'm just not ready.
No, just rising up a little bit. Being better.
I'm not ready to turn the page yet. I want to just soak
in. I think their roster is more talented than people believe, yet their quarterback is not fixable like most people believe.
Oh, we don't know about – well, I don't know about that. We will see. Bruce Arians can't do anything with it.
No, I just like so many people are invested in a mediocre quarterback who turns the ball over so much, and he's not even a good character guy. So I refuse to get invested in Jameis Winston.
We've got 5 months to have this conversation.
It's like, what does Jameis Winston have over everyone that they're so invested in him being a good quarterback? He's been a bad person and a bad quarterback, so I don't care.
Fair.
And that wraps up our Dynasty Talk. Dave.
Wes is just deflecting from Mariota. It's all just
Mariota has not accosted anyone
just
in an
so
Uber
know,
vehicle or yelled stuff on a cafeteria table at Florida State.
Matter of fact,
been accused of heinous crimes.
Matter of fact, two-thirds of his teammates say that he's never even spoken to them. He's very quiet. He's very shy. Just what you want in your QB.
Very early in the past the draft process in 2015, there was a line drawn in the sand. Greg got on the side of the Tampa Bay quarterback. Wes got on the side of the Nashville quarterback. And ever since
everyone's
then,
lost.
It's been very awkward.
Yeah.
Every time either quarterback
No winners
comes
here. Up. Right, no winners.
Everyone's lost, including the listeners.
Oh, it's been full of sound and fury.
I've enjoyed it.
Signifying nothing.
No one has won, for
it's
sure.
It's been wasted airtime for a long time.
Dave Damashek, you've come in here and you've done it again. Dave's of Thunder, also part of the Adam Carolla universe, of course, with Good Sports, and the Dave Damashek football program 2 times a week, even in the off season.
That's right. That's right.
What about
I
that
think you've said it all.
You still have Handsome Hank still involved, right?
He is still a part
yeah.
of the program.
It seems
yeah.
like he kind of presents himself as a little bit above it now. He's like, I make it on when I can, but
right.
I can't always do
he's
it.
He's a big hitter now. He's making yeah. all those international games. He's taking the beautiful game abroad, you know?
Yeah, he's a big hitter. He's a guy.
The Llama.
There's always a constant churn above the line, if you want to call it that, on the third floor.
You
here.
Guys making hay over in the UK must be aware of it. I've heard tell many times over at this point that he walks down the street, legitimately, that he walks
Stop.
Down the streets of London and people
Stop.
Say, Handsome Hank!
I believe
maybe
it.
At an NFL event, I feel like. But you're right. I think he is revered. He came to a dinner that I had with some guys who work in the UK, Nat Coombs, who has a great podcast there and is on, you know, BBC and everything. And when his group found out that Henry was going to join us, I was already there. Oh, it was like just ooh.
Did Henry want that? I feel like Henry.
I'm just saying there was excitement. It was like ooh, the hot girl's going to show up. Didn't know. I've never met him. It was exciting.
Really? Well, Henry is a hot girl in a way.
Well, except he's not a girl.
Well, that's true. All right. Anyway, Shaq, thank you.
Thank you, fellas. Mazel tov again there, Greg.
And you're wearing a Wrangler shirt,
appreciate
Shaq,
it.
Which
Thanks, Dave.
I, as a man, this is a very Shaq shirt. It's right off the Shaq line, but I've never seen you as a Wrangler man.
Oh, no, listen. Wrangler and the Dave Damashek football program had a beautiful hot affair for a while there. Yeah. No, this is some of
I like
the
food. That's
some of the bounty you've got.
I got pants and everything. You can borrow some.
All right. There we go. Ricky, happy birthday.
Wake up.
Thank
Erica.
You.
27.
Yeah.
Sat this one out, the show. But
why? Was it my fault, Rick?
I No. Rick. No, you got I just didn't want to mess up the flow. It was so good.
Oh,
so
yeah,
good.
Yeah. Okay, that makes sense. All right. That's Dan Hansa signing off right here. For Dave Damashek, the mailman, the old boss, and the 27-year-old Erica Tamposi. Behind the glass.
I'm Brady, still good.
Till Wednesday.